You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
So Michael Bloomberg is going to be a lot like Joe Biden. He's just the gift that keeps on giving. Both of these guys have got trench mouth or trench foot or foot and mouth disease or whatever you want to call it. My God, have you been following Bloomberg in the last couple of weeks? The guy's like totally in the barrel every single night. He can't open his mouth without getting into trouble. They're pulling out all these old clips from him doing speeches going all the way back to like 2011. Okay, so in 2011, here's a guy trying to, I'm sorry, I just got to laugh through this whole thing. Here's a guy running for president of the United States, but he's a candidate, but he's not a candidate, right? Because he hasn't campaigned, you know, like a normal person. He hasn't been in a debate. He hasn't been to a caucus. He hasn't been anything. He's just throwing money against a wall to see what sticks.
Well, he wants to do this by commercials and to buy advertising. That's his way of doing this. It's not by getting down and dirty with the other candidates at all. No.
He might as well take out full page ads in all of
sure
his newspapers.
Of course, he would be doing that.
No conflict of interest there.
He can buy as much network time as he wants.
Yeah, but you know what? Here's what he can't buy. I don't think, even if he spends billions of dollars, I don't think he'll be able to buy the votes of the American people. Now, the average voter, we both know, is relatively uninformed. Okay, but I don't think they're going to go for Bloomberg. So back in 2011, he's telling people during a speech that blacks and Latinos, they don't know how to behave in the workplace. Okay, so that's 2011. Then he's talking about stop and frisk, and he was in favor of stop and frisk. So he kind of sounded like us for a little bit there, right?
Right.
A couple of old law enforcement dogs. Of course, we're in favor of stop and frisk as long as it's done legally. But now he's walking that back and apologizing to the black community. And the latest one, which as my dear departed mom would say, just frost my socks, is he's belittling farmers and ranchers and basically telling everybody how simple it is to be a farmer. Hey, you just dig a hole, you throw a seed down there, you cover up the hole, you throw some water in there, and boom, there you go. I mean, what the heck do you need to know?
You know, and those things are bad enough, Ron, but his business life in his company, he has had numerous complaints from women that work for him about the things that he says to them. And they are so extremely egregious that I wouldn't even repeat them right now. I mean, I can say a few things. He's had a lot of complaints. A woman in his office was pregnant and he told her, just kill it.
Are you kidding me?
No. And she filed a complaint. Then there was another situation where he said to a woman, if clients told you to lay down and strip naked so they could F you, would you do that too? I mean, there's thing after thing after thing that he said to people. In fact, one of his employees on his 48th birthday put together a little book, and that book has a lot of those quotes and things that he said to women. And it was a very outrageous book. And he said, did I really say these things? And they said, and a lot more, but some things were too bad to even put in there. They didn't even really do it as a joke. They kind of did it to bring to his attention. But if you read from his employees, the things that he says to the women, he is extremely racist, and not just against blacks and Hispanics, but against Asian people as well. He is extremely, against women. Is it misogynistic? I don't even know the word. Is
well,
that
because
the right
you
word?
Never use it.
Yeah,
so you know what's interesting about me listening to you discuss this guy is that, you know, you're pretty down to earth, okay? Nothing really phases you. You're not the glass ceiling person, okay? You're just just a straight gal who takes care of business and does a great job. And for you to say, you know, some of these things about Mike Bloomberg, that really makes me pay attention, because I know most of the stuff just washes off of you like, you know, like a duck's back.
Well, you know, I actually miss the days when we could banter back and forth at work and have fun conversations. And oh my gosh, I could tell you stories of things.
Well, no, all you have to do is be around the dinner table with the kids, okay?
things in the workplace back in the day. But a lot of it was in good fun. He has so crossed that line of good fun that it he's had a lot of complaints, so I'll just say that.
So let me ask you a question, and I haven't heard this question come up yet on the news, and you and I watch a lot of news, especially political news. So why do you think this guy's running for president of the United States? I mean, this guy's putting billions of dollars in there. They're talking he's going to put over $2 billion. He may even put as much as $4 billion in there. Nobody's seen anything like it. So my question is, he's a very unlikely candidate. Why is this guy running for president of the United States?
Well, I think that, first of all, I think that he lives, as we always talk about, an insulated life. So he doesn't realize how off the wall he is. He just doesn't even realize it. But the other thing is, he hates Donald Trump. And he thinks he can do it better. There is a big ego thing between the two of those men.
Do you think that's a $3 billion ego thing? Do you think he hates President Trump $3 billion worth?
I think it's not just an ego thing. I think it's a combination of a power trip. And yes, I do think that he's going after President Trump. And I think that he saw Trump do it, so now he thinks he can do it, and he can do it better.
Two different personalities.
Completely different, not just personality.
Well, characters.
Yes. Politics. Everything that they believe in is diametrically opposed one to the other.
That's true.
So, you know, where I see, as a woman, where I see President Trump, you know how much heat he took for liking women, for, you know, kind of going after women. They kept saying that he was attacking women and those types of things. In my mind, I just see that as that's the way that it has been in the world of successful men. And you can name hundreds, if not thousands, of them.
That, me, for instance.
Yeah, like you. they do. Women are attracted to them, like, you know, flies to honey.
Like me.
And yeah, like you. And so, you know, and men take advantage of that. That is the way of the world. It has been since the day the world was born. However, what I never heard from President Trump was the kind of demeaning that I hear from Bloomberg and all of the employees complaining. Trump's employees, almost to a one, really love him. And they always spoke well of him as a boss. I mean, you always have one or two here or there, but they always spoke well of him, just like Steve Wynn. You know, I mean, Steve Wynn always was spoken of well by his employees. Bloomberg is not spoken of well by his employees.
Well, you know, that's really interesting.
And okay, that's very telling to me.
Well, it is. You know, this guy's going to spend a lot of money. I think he's going to be a flash in the pan. You know, recently, you know, they're floating the idea of bringing in Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Or Michelle Obama.
Or Michelle Obama into that campaign. We'll see where the heck that goes.
Well, I think that it would be a fight, because there is a percentage of the country, Ron, that nothing that Trump does is ever going to be right. And even though we love what he's done, and so many people love what he's done, there's going to be people that are going to vote against him no matter what.
Absolutely. I totally get that. Well, let me change it up and call to mind that the legislature in Virginia just overturned Governor Northam's assault weapons ban, and it didn't even make it through committee. So, you know, you have the pro-Second Amendment advocates that clearly overshadowed, in this particular case, the Democratic anti-gun lobby, which is heavily funded by, who did we just finish talking? about Michael Bloomberg, right? So heavily funded by him and political action committees that are all anti-gun. And it looks like the people of the state of Virginia, the pro-Second Amendment people, have spoken, because what they did is they went down there in mass. God bless every single one of them. That's what you need to do to let politicians know that you're not going to tolerate a lot of the garbage that they try to, you know, push on us. And they went down there and they let their voices be heard, and it scared that legislature. And of course, the committee was made up of legislators, and they threw it out of committee. So
that's
right
great.
Now, the assault weapons ban is no more.
And you know, isn't that ironic that we could not get Chick-fil-A into San Antonio Airport by all of the people trying to do so? And it's such a different thing than having assault weapons, right? But you couldn't even get Chick-fil-A in there.
Well, I think we have competing chicken industries in Texas. Okay,
we've got there's so much chicken in Texas. It's crazy.
Every place you go there, I mean, there's 10 chicken stores, 10 fried chicken stores, you know, going down any boulevard.
Chick-fil-A is still
in a
number
major,
one.
Yeah, exactly right. No, I mean, it's phenomenal food, but that also, you know, puts a burr under our saddle, because we're frequent travelers, and we've got San Antonio International Airport, which is our airport that we go to, and that's where they wanted to have the Chick-fil-A. And, I mean, there's some other restaurants there, but I don't think there's a single restaurant there that's as good as Chick-fil-A. And if you think about all the hundreds of thousands of dollars that Chick-fil-A would bring the city of San Antonio in revenue, in tax revenue, and plus make the travelers happy. And then you get, you know, a mayor in a city council that is trying to do the politically correct thing for God knows what reason and keep Chick-fil-A out of there. I just think that's atrocious. And by the way, to date, they've spent almost $400,000 in litigation. That's the taxpayers' money of the city of San Antonio trying to keep Chick-fil-A out of there.
You know, I want them to keep politics out of my sports, out of my award shows, and out of my fast food dining. Thank you.
Out of my airport.
Well, yeah. I mean, but out of our
just
dining.
Stay out of it.
Keep the politics out of the dining. Just feed me. That's all that I care about. Well, here's a frost your socks moment. President Barack Obama tweeted out a photo of his signature on the 2009 economic stimulus bill. And he said that, quote, 11 years ago today, near the bottom of the worst recession in generations, I signed the Recovery Act, paving the way for more than a decade of economic growth and the longest streak of job creation in American history. Oh, my goodness.
But you know, his buddy, who's running for president of the United States, Joe Biden, is jumping on top of that Obama bandwagon and taking credit for that as well. And you know, it kind of reminds me of Bloomberg with the analogy of how simple it is to be a farmer. Well, you just get a piece of paper, an economic stimulus agreement, and you sign it, and voila, fantastic economic growth for the country. Well, guess what?
Well, President Trump, of course, came right back. And he said that he reversed every single failed Obama-era economic policy, and with it, reversed the floundering Obama-Biden economy.
And let me,
which is absolutely true.
Well, it is. And so, as a result of some of these things, our stock market, okay, so we're talking about compare and contrast the last 3 years of the Obama administration to the first 3 years of the Trump administration. And here's what we found. Our stock market is up 56% since Trump took office, 56%. So more than half. And why, you know, why is this important? And because over half of Americans participate in the stock market. Okay. And some people participate and they don't even know they're participating.
That's right, through their 401ks.
And their pension programs, right? Mm-hmm. And so that stock market under President Trump has gone up 56%. A couple of the reasons for that resonated with the stock market: tax cuts and deregulation. Those are two important things. Manufacturing is up nearly 4%, which was double the rise that happened in the last 3 years of President Obama and Vice President Biden's administration. So that's really important. Manufacturing jobs up twice as many. 487,000 manufacturing jobs created in the last 3 years, as opposed to the last 3 years of Obama's administration, about 287,000. So not exactly half, but 200,000 more jobs in 3 years with the Trump administration.
I will tell you, as a business owner, the business community really watched that election. And had the election been for Hillary, the economy would have stayed as it was, or even gotten worse.
I think it would have tanked.
It could have tanked.
I think it would have tanked.
But it would not have had the boom. There was so much optimism when President Trump woke up that next morning and was president. The business community celebrated because they had a businessman who understands economics finally in there, and that is what they needed. And that started the road. Of course, all the steps he's taken, just look at the employment for everybody.
Well, as a matter of fact, employment is the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years, and wages have been rising. Now, truth be told, under Obama, wages started to rise. But since Trump has come into office, they have risen more. And what's more important is that for those people that are the blue-collar workers, not administrators, the blue-collar workers have experienced the rise in salaries far more than the people on the upper side.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And the tax cut went into everybody's pocket. And, you know, when people say that this doesn't work for the middle class, I employ those people. I know exactly how it impacted them, and it impacted them a lot, and it impacted them positively. So job market is great. Stock market is great. You know, there's just so many good things happening. Why anybody in this country would want to vote Democrat in this next election to get Trump out, for whatever your reason is, you don't want to go back to the economy that we had.
No, you don't. And I just think it was ridiculous for President Obama and Joe Biden to all of a sudden start claiming credit. Okay, because with Obama and Biden, everything was Bush's fault. Bush's fault, Bush's fault, Bush's fault. Then they're in office for 8 years, and all of a sudden it's still Bush's fault. And then after they leave office, now they want to claim credit to President Trump and his administration's good work. Okay? I mean, you can't take these two guys seriously. And I think Trump was correct today in taking them both on.
Yeah. Well, you know, everywhere that we travel, oh my gosh, there's so much building going on and so many new things happening. And I mean, that's just a sign of a great economy.
Well, you know, the other thing, you know, and I'll just leave it with this, but we also travel internationally, and we are seeing a tremendous increase in the building that's going on internationally.
Yes.
And we keep telling people this. And then when we talk with our international friends and people we meet, they say the same thing. What is good for the United States economy is always good for our economy, because Americans visit internationally.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police,
at Amazon.com.
Well, in President Trump news, President Trump is the first sitting president to ever be the Grand Marshal of the Daytona 500. And what did that bring to the Daytona 500, which was, you know, an amazing event? It's every year. But this year, because of President Trump, viewership on television was up 32%. And people in the stands were the highest in the last 5 years.
In other words, over 100,000 people there, and you're more of a NASCAR person I am, right? I mean, you're such a stud. Okay, you go to all that crazy stuff, monster trucks,
and, I like doing everything.
And all of that stuff, okay? But I got to tell you, when I heard that he was going to be the Grand Marshal at NASCAR, right, at the Daytona, I'm one of those guys that tuned in. And I tell you what, I had a blast watching it because, number one, you don't get to see a flyover with Air Force One from 500 feet off the ground. That is a formidable aircraft, number one. And number two, I am so fascinated by the beast.
The beast. Okay? He drove the beast around.
I read all the statistics on the beast.
Yep.
And you know that darn car weighs 22,000 pounds.
Wow.
Okay, 22,000 pounds. The armored doors are said to be about 7 inches thick, ceramic, and the windows are 5 inches thick. And they say, they won't tell you what the maximum speed of that vehicle is, but it's been said that it goes about 200 miles an hour, which is just as fast, just about, as those NASCARs. Right?
Leave it to say that it goes pretty fast.
And it was cool. It was, you know, the guy just totally got into it. Everybody just loved him. I mean, they were panning all around the stadium or the race car track. And everybody was applauding, and everybody that ran the event that day was so complimentary to the President of the United States. So you know what? Right on. Get in there, gentlemen. Start your engines.
Yep. Yeah. So I was glad to see that. But you showed me something today that I didn't get a chance to really look at, but was fascinating, and you were absolutely glued to it. So tell me what that was.
Okay. Well, I saw it on Facebook, and I think if people go to their own Facebooks, it's probably going to be shared, and it's all over the place. But what it is a drone's view of building the wall, and it gives you a fascinating aerial history of how the wall is being built. And I'll tell you what, we've been to the border numerous times. We've seen the wall in different sections. You know, of course, it's built different ways in different areas of our southern border. But I'll tell you what, watching this video, and it takes about 10 minutes to watch the video, like you said, I was absolutely glued to the screen because it shows you exactly how they're doing it, and it takes an army to build it, okay? And here's a couple of stats. First of all, it's at least the sections that we are seeing being manufactured are 8 feet wide by 30 feet high. So that's a formidable wall, 30-foot high wall. Anti-climbing tubes, which are actually square, so they're rectangular tubes, if I can use that term, and they are infused with concrete. I always thought that they were
hollow. Okay.
But they're not. They actually, squirt concrete into them and, you know, weld everything together, and they put them together in these 8 by 30 sections. And then those again are cemented into the ground. And it looked to me to be about 6 feet deep. So that's pretty good cementing. And they do 20 sections a day. So, and they do, which is about 1,000 feet. So they do about 1,000 feet a day, and they do a mile's worth of the wall every week. Absolutely fascinating.
A mile of the wall a week?
A mile of the wall a week.
That's a lot.
It is. And when you see all the steps, some people say, wow, it's sure taking a long time to build the wall. You need to see all the steps that go into, first of all, they got to prepare the ground, okay? And then they've got to, they literally bring portable cement factories and reconstruct them. Right, so they tear them down and they build them up.
They have to keep moving them.
Yeah, and you know, you see this. We see this in Texas because they build, you know, so many concrete freeways here that you see the cement factory. These small portable cement factories. They put them together, but man, there's an army of trucks and an army of welders and cranes, and I just thought it was fascinating. So you know that wall's getting built.
Well, I'm glad that the wall's getting built, and he just, I guess, got some more money to build more walls.
I think he freed up about $3.6 billion.
Yeah, so okay. That's great. And it is having a huge impact on people crossing illegally over our border, so I'm all for that.
Well, you know, Linda, speaking about immigration, the Department of Homeland Security has decided to send in what they call BORTAC teams, which are the Border Patrol tactical teams. And this is sort of like a SWAT team for the Border Patrol. And they're trained by law enforcement and SWAT teams and also special operations SWAT teams. Now, the object of the BORTACs, and I've worked with these guys before, they are absolutely well-trained and formidable, is to back up the ICE agents when they are doing ICE raids against the most violent criminal illegal aliens. So they're not going to use BORTAC teams, you know, this tremendous tactical resource, just against, you know, regular people. That are
the family of four that's, you know, working and sending their kids to school. They're not going to do that.
No. We're talking about MS-13, cartels, traffickers, and things like that. And also in their what they call stash houses. And the stash houses, what do they do there? They stash narcotics. They stash weapons. Those types of places. So, and they are specifically being deployed to sanctuary cities. So we're looking at San Francisco, we're looking at Chicago, we're looking at New York, places like this. And this is the pushback, and I think it's an appropriate pushback from President Trump and Department of Homeland Security against sanctuary states and sanctuary cities that are not obeying the rule of law. They have prevented their law enforcement agencies from cooperating with the federal government, specifically ICE, and they have really made those jurisdictions far more dangerous. And the president and the Homeland Security director have said, enough, we're going to put these teams in there, we're going to have a federal presence. If you're not going to help us, we're going to do it ourselves.
Right, and I really, really hope that they come up with something that the courts will not put down that they're going to be able to get the law enforcement to have to cooperate with ICE, because that's the way that it should be. They shouldn't have the choice. And you know, people in the communities shouldn't accept it either, Ron, because when they don't cooperate with ICE, you know, people somehow think that they're being kinder and gentler, and they're saving the average illegal alien who's been living there for a while. That is not the case.
ICE doesn't care about those people.
No, ICE doesn't care about those people. What they are doing is trying to get the criminals off the street so that they don't come and harm all of us.
That's exactly right.
To not have that happen is just so unacceptable to me. And people just have to not vote for those people, and they have to complain in any way that they can. Go to city council meetings, go to your legislators, do whatever needs to be done to say that this has to stop, because they are endangering the people.
Well, you know, the rhetoric is so ridiculous. You know, I was an interpreter for my department. I speak Spanish fluently, and I worked in the neighborhoods. I did a lot of work with gangs, anti-gang enforcement. And I can tell you that in the 23 years that I did that type of police work, never once did an illegal alien family cooperate with the police, whether it was a Caucasian officer or whether it was a Hispanic officer, which was my partner, did they cooperate with us and give us tips about the bad guys that were in the neighborhood. So when they say that, Oh, you're just scaring the, you know, illegal alien immigrants. You're keeping them from cooperating from the police. I'm sorry, that just doesn't happen. And for more reasons that I'll discuss right now. So, you know, they need to understand that ICE is there ultimately to protect these communities from violent illegal aliens and people that are recidivists, that are illegal aliens committing crimes in these communities.
Really interesting story just came out of California again. And this is regarding CalPERS, the investment, the pension
for the California employees.
Yes. Right. And the guy who's in charge of this is a guy called Ubin Meng, and he is the chief investment officer of CalPERS. Okay, so it's his job to take the money that everybody puts in there and invest it. And where is he investing it? Well, it has just come to light that he is a graduate of the Thousand Talents Program, which is a program that's funded by the Chinese government and controlled by the Chinese Communist Party.
I was just going to say, that's a Chinese Communist Party company.
Yes. And where he's investing $3.1 billion of CalPERS money is into 172 companies from one of our, really, our biggest...
Military rival.
Yeah.
And economic rival.
I was going to say enemy, because I do feel that China is not on our side. But anyway, some of the companies that he invests in with the CalPERS money is into Chinese military shipbuilding, Chinese naval base building, companies that have developed surveillance technologies to spy on Muslims. And, you know, I mean, there's 172 different companies that are involved in this whole China. And this is where he is putting the money, not in America, but in China. Communist China, by the way.
Well, first of all, you can't make this stuff up. And thanks for bringing it to light, because I had not heard of it. But the thing that really gets me, besides not reinvesting in America, is investing in who I see is our adversary, especially militarily. And so basically he's taking the hard-earned monies of American workers from Calizuela,
yes, right?
And he's applying them to Chinese communist military ventures, which
yes,
would be who? Against us.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think it's Jim Banks is his name. He's a Republican senator or congressman. He's the one who has been talking about this. And he has contacted Gavin Newsom to find out, what the heck? What's going on here?
This guy shouldn't even be in that position. To me, it's like almost a traitorous act.
It is a traitorous
act.
And
I think that if all those Californians knew that their money was being spent like that, they would be outraged. And I don't care how liberal you are. I think you would be outraged by that. That you're literally feeding the flames of our enemy militarily.
Well, and who would think to put a person in that position that has been through who's a graduate of the Thousand Talents program, which is a communist program.
It just shows me that there is no vetting taking place, or maybe somebody's on the dime, right? And getting bribed to do that. Because, you know, Linda, and I'm going to kind of switch gears for a second, but still stay on track with what you're talking about. Have you been paying attention to the investigations that are just starting right now on universities that are getting millions and millions of dollars from the Chinese communist government?
I have seen that. And again, there are people that, like you said, that they're on the dole from the Chinese government to do different things and have different programs in these universities.
Well, it could be very serious, because just recently, The United States government, federal law enforcement, arrested a Harvard professor that is in charge of biochemical work at, like I said, Harvard University. And he had two staffers, both of which were Chinese, and who were identified as Chinese agents of the communist government, and they both fled. They were both arrested, attempting to take flights back to China, but this guy was on the dime, getting bribes from the Chinese government every single month of $50,000 a month to provide them with biochemical stuff, right? And sneaking it out of the United States to communist China. With this whole coronavirus that's going on, to me, it's like a Tom Clancy novel.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about it, and I've been doing a lot of reading on it, and it's very, very disturbing stuff. And China has made it very well known by their higher-ups for many years, not yesterday, but for many years, that their intention is that they feel that they have too many people in China and they need more space. And their space that they want is the space in America. And everything that they're doing behind the scenes to steal our technology, to subvert America, while on the face of things, trying to look like they're our friend. And right. They're not our friend.
Right. United States universities have got no business taking money from a foreign communist government. It's as simple as that. And when you and I talk about subverting the United States in a long-term plan, we're talking plans that are 50 years old, by such things as failing to teach government and civics and just talking about anti-government things and rewriting our history and just all of this and dumbing down the United States population so that we are confused about democracy and we're confused about how our government works and we're anti-law enforcement, all of these things that would cause the country to implode internally so that a country like the Chinese government could come in and take over.
Yes. And in another conversation, I want to talk to you more about that because I'll give you some ideas of the things that I've been reading.
And things are scarier than most people think. And I'm not a black helicopters person.
Yeah.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service Sacrifice Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Well, another California story in the news, of course, and this one's regarding Twitter. So the CEO of Twitter is Jack Dorsey. And Jack Dorsey is planning on moving Twitter out of San Francisco. And San Francisco is not happy about it.
Well, San Francisco gets a tremendous amount of tax, money from, these dot-com companies, Twitter. There are several dot-com companies in the city of San Francisco. And why they continue to stay there and pay those exorbitant prices while having to live in and around the cesspool of San Francisco and the dangers of San Francisco is just beyond me.
Yeah, well, I think that you hit it on the head there, is that Jack Dorsey doesn't want to be dependent just on San Francisco. The taxes are extremely high. The housing is extremely expensive for his employees. So therefore, he's having a hard time getting employees. What you find is that the people that are making good money, they're probably not working at Twitter. The average employee has had to move out of the area because they can't afford the housing there. And so what you're getting is really a lot of immigrants moving in and that type of thing, and they don't have the qualifications. And that presents a problem not just for Twitter, but for all of the employees. It's interesting because Aaron Peskin, who's the San Francisco supervisor, is criticizing Jack Dorsey from Twitter, just saying that he's, basically Trump's puppet. But that's not the case. What they need to do, which they're not doing, is look in the mirror and see, as you said, the cesspool that they've created of San Francisco and why nobody, A, can afford to live there, and B, nobody wants to live there.
Well, let's just look at it. I mean, moving away from any type of political conversation. Let's just look at it as good business sense. The purpose of business is to make a profit. Okay, so Twitter is not a nonprofit organization. Twitter is supported by the money in large part of investors, and so they have to look at their bottom line. And so every dollar that you unnecessarily spend in an extremely high tax municipality like San Francisco is a dollar that you are taking away from your stockholders who have invested in you. So, you have to think about, your bottom line and how best to serve your stockholders.
Yeah, and the gas prices also are a problem there for people, for employees. If they have to live a little further out, then they have to drive in, they have to pay those high gas prices. They have had a lot of people, obviously we talk about it all the time, migrating out of California into areas like Las Vegas and Nevada area and Arizona.
Arizona and Texas.
Yeah, and where housing and gas is less expensive. So just between 2016 and 2017, California lost more than 138,000 people. So, these people are going somewhere else, and these companies need to look to relocate in those areas where they can get the good employee base.
Yeah, when you put it all together and you think about all the expenses for living in a big city like San Francisco, and you're making X amount of dollars. Now, come on, Twitter people, for the most part, unless they're in management, administration, they're not making $100,000
sure.
a year. Okay, and I mean, even down in the Tenderloin, I saw an article, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and the article was about people that are paying $4,500 to live in an apartment in the Tenderloin, and having grown up, born and raised in San Francisco, I want to tell you that the Tenderloin is like the slums. Okay, so now they're going in there and they're trying to regentrify those areas, and they're building these high-rise condominiums and apartment complexes. But your rent or your mortgage payment is about $45,000 to $5,000 a month. Then you got to park your vehicle. If there's no underground parking, you've got to park your vehicle in parking structures or parking lots that charge an exorbitant monthly rate for you to be able to park your car there. Then you've got to be able to get to work, which costs you money. If you're going to park your car, you're going to park your car someplace else, or you're going to take city transit, which is pretty dangerous and horrible. And you got to walk through all those streets. You remember the poop patrol and all the syringes on the ground and all the homeless people, because you're in the Tenderloin, okay, which is where you're going to find those people. And it just, it starts sucking money out of you. You are hemorrhaging money. You don't feel safe, but you're going to work for this dot-com company. And it just makes so more sense to the company to champion their workers by moving them to a place where the worker can actually, you know, have a decent lifestyle in living in a place that doesn't cost so much money to live.
Yeah, and I think Nevada would be a great place. I think Arizona would be a great place. You know, Texas was, of those 138,000 people, Texas was the recipient of 79,000 of them between 2016 and 17. And Arizona and Nevada gained Arizona 63,000 and Nevada 38,000. That's a lot of people coming into these areas. It's tough because everybody's moving away from California and they're losing their tax base.
Well, look what just happened recently with Apple. So Apple is going to take their Mac PowerBook or something, that division, and they're going to move that division out of California, out of Cupertino, and they're going to build a brand new billion-dollar campus, I think outside of Austin, which is our state capital. But the talk
sure
is they're going to
take Waco or it's somewhere around there.
Well, they're moving to Texas, they're taking upwards of 10,000 people with them.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. And can you imagine the amount of money that Apple is going to save by just making that one move, which would be similar to what they would do in Nevada or what they would do in Arizona?
Yeah, I worry about that because all those people coming out of California are going to, be on the blue side rather than the red side. And that's a problem for Texas. It's a problem that we're definitely looking at in the upcoming election. As Texas goes, so goes the nation. So anyway, thought that was an interesting story.
Well, I think it is. And I don't think that Twitter's going to be the first person to leave.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but way back in 2017, there was a giant iceberg that broke off out of the in the Antarctic and started heading north towards the open ocean.
I do remember that, yeah.
That iceberg's been traveling for almost 3 years now, 2.5 years or so, and it is pretty close to getting to the open ocean. That iceberg is 2,300 square miles, so about the size of the state of Delaware.
Holy
yeah.
cow.
So they're worried about the shipping lanes.
Yeah, I would think so. Watch out, state of Delaware in front of you.
I know it. What's interesting is that they said at the time when it broke off that it wouldn't last very long in open water. Well, it has not changed virtually at all. It has lasted 2.5 years traveling along to the open ocean, and it's still the same size.
Well, you know, I think people have to remember that when you see an iceberg, you see the top of the iceberg, the part that's above the water, that's like only 10% of the iceberg. Like 90% of the iceberg is underneath the water. And so, which calls to play the depths of the ocean where this iceberg can travel. Now, obviously, some parts of the ocean are 30, 40,000 feet deep. But I find that extremely interesting because, you know, I don't know how tall the iceberg is up on top, but boy, 90% underneath the water, it's going to run into something.
You know, it's not tall. It's almost like a flat piece of land floating along.
Okay.
Now, obviously, there's 2,300 square miles of it. I haven't seen the whole thing, but just the pictures of the front leading edge of it that you can see they're real flat. So it's interesting that it hasn't broken up into smaller icebergs. But anyway, I just thought I'm fascinated to watch this as it goes. Another really interesting story that I just find is incredible. In Chernobyl, Ron, where we had the nuclear meltdown.
Correct.
Right?
Several years ago. Many years ago, right.
Inside the nuclear reactor, they have just found a fungus, fungi that eats radiation. It's growing up the walls of the nuclear reactors and it's eating the radiation inside. And it just is so fascinating to me because I just think that, you know, God has a solution to every problem that we create. We just need to find it. But in this case, this fungus, it's a black fungus, has found its food source there.
You know, I think that if you leave the world alone, when the world experiences damage, either it's destruction by man-caused destruction or by weather-caused destruction, if you leave it alone long enough, you know, sometimes over years, sometimes over hundreds or thousands of years, the world has the ability, or the earth has the ability, of repairing itself.
Oh, I absolutely believe so. What's interesting about this particular fungus is that it's full of melanin, which is really interesting because that is, you know, in people that have darker skin,
right.
They have more melanin.
That's the pigment.
And
right.
And that absorbs light and dissipates ultraviolet radiation in skin. So obviously, I mean, this is just nature's way of taking care of the mess that we as humans created in Chernobyl.
You know, I'm of the theory that all of the diseases that we have in the world, cancer, all of these different diseases, I believe that God has placed something on this earth to be able to cure every single one of those diseases, some sort of edible plant or some sort of substance that's there that can cure anything that happens, that man and animals experience. Do you believe that?
Oh, I absolutely believe that. We just have to find those keys that we've been given, you know? It's like a treasure hunt. Another interesting scientific story is researchers have taken locusts and they have put a little tiny, like, robot thing on top of them.
Like a transmitter or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, a little tiny. And it enables them to detect gases released by substances like ammonia and nitrate. In other words, basically they've turned grasshoppers or locusts into
canaries.
Bomb sniffing locusts.
Okay.
I was going to say dogs, but that didn't fit.
No, I use canaries because miners have traditionally used canaries to smell methane gas, you know, in the mines where they work, right? Which is deadly. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, they actually implant electrodes into their brains, and really fascinating. So, I mean, there's a key to everything, and it's just amazing to me that somebody would even think of this with a locust.
Yeah, I just think I think what we're doing in science is absolutely fascinating.
Well, with the new rage about people eating superfoods, I decided to do a little bit of research into those because I don't even know what most of those are.
Well, what is a superfood? Give me an example
of
that.
They're foods that are rich in nutrients, and typically they're plant-based and they have lots of health benefits. So here's three of them that I think are really interesting. And the first one is a collagen-based product. It is a collagen powder, and you can put it into different things. Now, collagen, you know, when you think of collagen, you think of lip injections or that type of thing. But this actually is a powder. You can add it into a drink or something. They're made of animals like chickens or fish scales, and they have high amounts of amino acids that are crucial to repairing tissues and joint surfaces all over your bodies, which support your skin and hair. So I thought that this was really an interesting product, and Jennifer Aniston apparently is a big believer in it.
Okay, so I recently saw a commercial on something called Super Beets. Is that one of those superfoods?
Well,
is that what we're
talking
about?
It is supposed to be a superfood, yeah. Anything that's very high in antioxidants and has, you know, a lot of things that can help your body. But this particular collagen powder is supposed to combat thinning hair, chronic digestive problems, and lighten and brighten skin. So that should be something that we're going to add to our diet because I just find this product interesting. It's kind of expensive. There's a place called vital proteins, collagen, peptides. That's what this one particular one is called. There's a bunch of them. It's $41 for a 20-ounce jar.
Yikes.
But apparently the health benefits are amazing.
Okay, so the other day we were doing some shopping in Costco, mm-hmm. and we were over there in the pharmacy section,
yeah.
right, which is huge, has all the millions of vitamins and stuff like that. And you said that you were looking for some vitamin D. Well, yesterday I was looking at an article by a doctor, and he said that vitamin D is probably the most important thing to take for your health.
Oh.
So what were you looking for vitamin D
no,
for?
No, I take it every day. I just
okay, what does it do?
Out.
Because I don't use it. So what does it do?
Well, I'm definitely not the expert on that, but I know that for strong bones and strong,
Is it like calcium
know.
Stuff?
It's,
what is it?
It's in that same family, because I know when my doctor told me to take calcium every day, he said you also take vitamin D. So that's what I do religiously because the doctor told me to do that. And I do notice a difference if I don't take it. So I think it's a good product. The other product is Manuka honey, which I find really interesting because there's honey all over the world, but this particular one is native to New Zealand. And apparently it has some antibacterial properties that makes it different than other honeys. It has anti-inflammatory and antiviral properties, and it also can treat open wounds. One other benefit of this Manuka honey is that it minimizes bad oral bacteria that causes plaque to form on your teeth. So that sounds like a really good product. It also helps with a sore throat. So a 250-gram jar of it costs around $30.
That's about it, right? I mean, so these things are helpful. They're a little bit expensive, and I'm sure that has a lot to do with the processing of these things, right?
Yeah, and you know, the last one real quick is one that we use every day in our household, which is extra virgin olive oil.
Oh, let me tell you what. The whole Mediterranean diet, I'm a huge, being Italian, I'm a huge believer in the Mediterranean diet. I think the only thing bad is, and by the way, it's not completely in the Mediterranean diet, but pasta. Okay. And if I could just stick with the Mediterranean diet and cut down on the pasta, I think I'd be okay. But I just love the pasta.
I know. So. I know. Okay. Well, I'm actually going to purchase two of these products because I'm really interested.
Oh.
And Desi says
time for bed.
Yes.